Good morning. My name is Connie Stewart. I'm vice president for university relations. This is the first time I've helped conduct a press conference in honor of the We have, over the past several years, of course, called you together at the significant happening with the National Superconducting Cyclotron Laboratory. Today is another of those occasions, and we're glad that you're here, and we hope to give you some very complete data and information about what has occurred here this weekend, and to bring you up to date on the cyclotron. To start the remarks, let me first say to you that President Mackey had hoped to be here. He was called to a meeting of the Council of Presidents and unable to come, so he sends his regrets. But, of course, he's excited and very happy about the achievement that we had anticipated here today. The opening remarks will be made by Provost Lee Winder, after which Hank Blosser, the director of the Cyclotron Laboratory, will talk to you. Vice President John Catlin, Vice President for Research and Graduate Studies, will perhaps say a few remarks, I think, John. And then Director Blosser will introduce other very important people to this project. After that, there will be an opportunity for you to ask your questions and to get the answers from all the right people. So again, here is Provost Lee Winder.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure to congratulate the faculty, staff, and students connected with this laboratory. The events of the past weekend are truly a marvelous achievement. It's always a joyous occasion when creative ideas have been translated into concrete programmatic achievements. To me, it's very important that all of the university and those interested in the university look at this laboratory, the achievements that are already in hand and those that are promised for the future, as setting standards for what Michigan State University must always aspire to. Whatever we do, we should aspire to excellence, and the combination, as I say, of creative thinking, diligent, tireless, often frustrating, and enduring hard work are the ingredients of such
a
people.
An acquaintance,
right.
Obviously, you were alone with her at the time?
Yes.
Leadership of Professor Henry Blosser certainly ought to be acknowledged on this occasion. Those of you who know him know that he is energetic, dynamic, friendly, warm, also tough and task-oriented, and that's the way it should be. Again, my congratulations to faculty, to staff, to students, to visiting scholars, and especially Professor Henry Blosser, the director of the laboratory. Oh.
So, thanks. It really is nice to stand here and say that the cyclotron is really doing everything we want it to do at this stage and doing it beautifully. There's been lots of milestones, as Vice President Stewart mentioned. We have milestones passed, starting the magnet, getting the RF system up to voltage, getting the vacuum on. There are milestones ahead of us, getting the beam out of the machine, the first experiment. But I think there's no milestone for any accelerator that's more important, more significant, than the first time that machine produces nuclear reactions. And that's the milestone which for this machine happened last Saturday. And the crew who did this are standing over here in front of this big liquid helium door. Merritt Mallory and Ed Cashy and Jack Riddell, our consultant, who isn't here, were in charge. Dave Clark, visiting professor from Berkeley. Bob Worsham, Felix Marty, graduate student Bruce Milton, and Helmut Laumer are the crew. So if you want to know more details of what really happened on Saturday, you go to see these guys. I just wish you guys had told me if I go out of town for an afternoon, you'd start the machine up a year ago. Anyway, it's a great thing. This is the first superconducting cyclotron to come into operation in the world. Three others are under construction. One started before this one, two have started since. And there are something on the order of 10 laboratories which are requesting funds to build machines of this type. I think that's because what is really the most unique feature of this machine, the fact that it greatly reduces the cost of doing nuclear research, is just ideally matched to the times in which we find ourselves. This machine would cost at least three times as much if it were built in the traditional way in which cyclotrons had previously been built. And, you know, I can't stand here today and say what it is that society is going to get from the basic research that will go on with this machine. But, yeah, we can all be sure that future generations will get very important benefits, as they have from all the basic research that has gone on in the past, as our present life depends on the basic research that's gone on in the past. And in the shorter range, there will certainly be significant spin-off applications of this technology. I'm sure that in something less than 5 years, machines of this type, small superconducting cyclotrons, will be involved in new diagnostic systems in major hospitals in the country and in the world. And cyclotrons are being used in Germany to study the wear process for automotive engines in order to develop longer-lived engines. And here on this campus, this cyclotron will be used, and the old one has been used, to study the processes by which plants utilize fertilizer with the objective of facilitating the growth of better crops, more nourishment for the world population. So, certainly we're standing here at the beginning of a period of very important basic research into the properties of the nucleus of the atom. What experiments will go on, what will be the first experiment, is something I can't say. This is a national facility, and there will be a national committee so that to determine who gets to use the beams that come out of the machine. We will be sending out in the next few weeks a request for proposals, asking every scientist who wants to do an experiment on this machine to submit documentation describing what he would like to do. And this national committee will then meet and will assess which of those experiments are the most likely to produce significant new advances in our knowledge. One of the members of that committee is David Scott, who's standing over here. And so I then propose to turn the podium over to David and let him tell you a bit of what he thinks will be happening with this machine. David.
Perhaps one of the best ways of assessing the new possibilities that are opened up in nuclear research with this cyclotron is to compare it with the sort of research that has been done in the past. In the past, we have been able to bombard a nucleus with a small particle, an elementary particle such as a proton or a neutron, This subjects the nucleus to a rather mild perturbation, but by all the many years of research, we have learned a great deal about the nucleus in that way. Now, this cyclotron is quite different. Instead of accelerating a small particle such as a proton, it is capable of accelerating a whole nucleus, such as an oxygen nucleus or a calcium nucleus, and ultimately a uranium nucleus. Now, these nuclei emerge from the machine traveling at enormously high speed. Typically, they will emerge traveling at a speed of 100,000 miles a second. Now, when a whole atomic nucleus at that speed plows into another atomic nucleus, you can imagine that it subjects the nucleus to tremendous stress and inflicts tremendous damage on the nucleus. The perturbations are much more radical and much more drastic than we have been able to achieve in the past. So one very dramatic type of research that can be done, for example, is to add large numbers of additional neutrons and protons to existing nuclei. So we can produce nuclei far beyond the familiar nuclei that we have in nature. These are so-called exotic nuclei. It is predicted that there are thousands of such nuclei out there waiting to be produced and waiting to be studied. And no doubt, when these exotic strange objects are created, as they will be extensively at this laboratory, we will be in for many surprises. But there are other extreme conditions that we can subject the nucleus to with this accelerator. We can create high density. When these two nuclei plow into each other, the nuclei can be compressed, creating higher densities than we have had before, and if we believe theoretical predictions, possibly making new states of nuclear matter. It is also possible to raise the nuclei to extremely high temperatures in these collisions. Temperatures that otherwise existed only in the early moments in the history of the universe. So again, this is another example of subjecting the nucleus to an extreme condition. It is also possible to inject enormous amounts of spin into the nucleus. When one massive object collides with the other, it can be set spinning at extremely high speed, generating terrific disruptive forces, centrifugal forces, which tear the nucleus apart. All of these extreme conditions will be pursued at this laboratory, and experimental apparatus is now nearing completion for undertaking all these projects.
I mean, there are different impacts and different resources.
I think in general one could say that these new possibilities that have opened up through the ability to hit one atomic nucleus with another atomic nucleus traveling at high speed has generated enormous excitement throughout the nuclear science community, and in a way has almost rejuvenated the study of nuclear science. So we expect, as Professor Blosser has said, that there will be a very large number of people coming from all over the country to do experiments here, and indeed from all over the world.
Let's recognize Vice President John Catlin also, who was seated earlier and probably couldn't be seen. Of course, Dr. Catlin has been very positive and instrumental in the securing of the cyclotron laboratory on this campus, so I should pay him tribute and at least have him out front smiling today with all of us. Even though Dr. Blosser was Director Blosser was not around when the event occurred, he's going to try to answer questions today about it. So he will start the fielding of questions and then call on those other experts to help him out when he's in trouble in answering your questions. Okay?
Yes, let's see. So the Tricatron itself is behind these shielding walls, which are just being erected. On this floor level, you come to a big dark red object, which is the steel yoke of the magnet itself. And sort of in through the holes of that yoke, you see an inner annular vessel, which houses the superconducting coil. And yeah, just a few inches away from that inner vessel is the it's very low temperature, 4 degrees above absolute zero, which is the temperature which is needed to operate the superconducting coil. Sticking up and down are the tuning structures for the accelerating electrodes, what we call the RF system. So above and below, if you go to either floor, you'll see these three column-like structures. Then down below, right in the very center, is the place the so-called ion source goes in. So those are the principal parts. In a space such as where I'm standing, this will ultimately become a part of the beam transport system. The pipes would carry the beams of particles from the cyclotrons to the targets where experiments take place. Just behind you over there is the large ship where the second of the coupled cyclotron pair will go. That machine is in an extensive, in an advanced state of construction. This big blue box behind me is the helium refrigerator, which will provide the helium for both that machine and the old one. Just over here is the smaller refrigerator, which is right now feeding helium to the 500 MeV. Yeah. Yes, we expect to get the beam out about 6 weeks from now. We certainly have a lot of problems as we go into the testing phase. It is a place where we're involved in debugging work that's been going on for some 5 years. So we find lots of mistakes that we've made in the past 5 years, correct them, and gradually work through the testing phase. So the very first beam test took place, yes, on Friday the 13th. That test was also successful, although it was not laid out to be a test which would produce nuclear radiation. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yes, the magnet has just beautifully agreed with the expectations from the design. So that it runs with a very low consumption of liquid helium. In an operating sense, it's just very similar to running a room temperature magnet. Step up to it and press the button, and you turn it on. Let's see, so the board was appointed by me with the approval of the sponsoring agency, the National Science Foundation, and the Department of Energy. And with suggestions from the group of scientists who constitute the users of the facility.
Give us a picture of about when the first experiments have to be run on it that would be, say, world-class scientific experiments.
So, John, yes, I would guess that the date for that first experiment would be something like March of next year. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah, the question, has the cyclotron attracted worldwide interest? And it certainly has. The event of last Saturday, I'm sure, was known at many laboratories in Europe almost as soon as I knew it. So, yes, and we also have just a constant stream of visitors. I don't know, but just many visitors every week coming through. So the project is being watched around the world. No, they're not. So the sponsoring agencies are U.S. agencies, and the board which then determines the use of the machine comes entirely from U.S. laboratories, although several of them, I think, are non-citizens, yes. Let's see, you're stretching me there. It is both private and public. I believe it's 6 members on the program advisory committee?
There are 5 members.
5 members, okay. Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry again, Well, so it gives the nuclear scientist a much less expensive tool, which will allow him to continue doing nuclear science, at an accelerated rate, even in these times of declining budget. And what does that mean to the layman? At some point in the future, it means things like what my wristwatch today relates to research of 20 years ago, but I can't tell you what. If we knew what it would be, then we'd say it's applied research. But certainly everything that we have around us, every advanced product, is based on the basic research of 10 or 20 years ago. And so undoubtedly the advanced products that we will be utilizing 10 or 20 years from now will be based on today's basic research. Yeah. But there's certainly no express interest that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. And no one said anything to me, so I don't know whether they're interested or not. Let's see, the devices do have a lot of inherent dangers when you're in the building. So that we maintain the building as a controlled area. The walls and the shielding and the access are all controlled according to federal standards, so that outside the building it meets all standards for non-radiation worker codes. Let's see, there is a tailored security system, yes, for the facility.
Are there other questions? Okay, one more here.
By the same process, that is, by a consultation with the scientific users of the facility, I then make a recommendation to the sponsoring agencies. If they approve that recommendation, then I make an appointment. Yes, there are terms, again, you're stretching my knowledge, but I believe it's by 2 and 4 years. So there will be an initial board with mixed appointments, so that we'll have a staggered appointment cycle. But the whole board won't be replaced in once. Yes, I think.
Mm-hmm. On questions of that type, if you need additional detail later, why don't you give Charles Downs or Ed Zabrowski a call, and Henry can get any specific details to them on the makeup of the advisory committee and those kinds of questions that we don't have information with us today. Are there any other questions? Okay. I'm sure you're welcome to talk to Dr. Blosser further and to members of the staff. Thank you very much.
Oh,